I'm not fucking around, man.
Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Bill Welker. You are listening to Picks and Pours, episode 20, if you can believe it already. We're going to make some picks for UFC Vegas 89, headlined by flyweight contenders Amanda Ribas and Rose Namajunas. Before we get into that, let me introduce from all the way across town, Matt the Mechanic. What's going on, Matt?
Hey, Bill, not much. Over here watching the biggest sporting event of the year.
Curling?
No, it's the Osaka, the Spring Grand Sumo Tournament.
Oh, the Spring Grand Sumo Tournament.
Yeah, the Spring.
Oh, why didn't you say guy, so?
Hoyoshiro, he was a rookie kid, and he was killing everybody. He was making like a 14 win streak, and then this, he lost, Bill.
Oh, damn! I'm glad I didn't bet on him.
You should check it out though. It's on YouTube. It's pretty fun.
I like watching some sumo wrestling.
I love. We used to sumo wrestle in class, and that was so much fun.
With Coach Bill.
Yeah, that was so much fun.
Yeah, yeah. He used to.
I had the strategy. I would just talk shit enough to the person that they get mad and just kind of rush at me, and then I just kind of move.
Yeah, just Bugs Bunny him.
I think I even got a current bare knuckle champion with that move.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Don't tell him.
Saucy. That current bare knuckle champion is probably a little heavier these days. I don't know if you would get that one.
I don't think he'll ever. That was back in my early white belt days. I don't think Dave will ever give me the light of day ever again.
Mm. Sure he would. In any case.
Not if he sees this.
He's got a good sense of humor. Pour of the week is a mystery pour for me. So my buddy Jason, who was commenting on the live show last week, sent me a package of samples of Michigan whiskeys. So this one's number 6. And I'm not going to... And then he gave me notes as to what's in each bottle. Like, they're all whiskeys from his local area. So I poured this one. It smells like peaches. I don't know if I'm way off on this because I have no idea what it is, but it's got like peaches and brown sugar. And a lot more burn than I expected. It's pretty nice. Got like some cinnamon spice to it. You know what?
I said, I don't think I've ever tasted or smelled a liquor and thought peaches and brown sugar.
Mm. Well, you've never had this one, I guess. It's Traverse City Whiskey Company, bourbon finished in sherry barrels. It's pretty tasty. 47.5% alcohol. So I don't know why it burns like it does. It burns like a cast strength. I wasn't expecting that, but yeah, nice and peachy. Probably from the sherry. It brings that
probably
fruitiness
from,
out.
You're right. Probably from the sherry. That's what I was thinking.
So yeah, sherry brings a nice sweetness. I'm not always a biggest fan of like finished whiskeys that are finished in like wine barrels and stuff, but every now and then one catches me just right. And I guess not knowing ahead of time that that's what this was, I think I'm enjoying it a little bit more. But I'm terrified about your hot take this week because this is the monster I have sitting next to me here. So hot take or take a shot. If I can't change Matt's mind on his hot take, I got to pour some of this Howler Head banana Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey with natural banana flavor.
Isn't it the official liquor of the UFC?
Yeah, but you know, the UFC has had a lot of dud alcohol sponsors in the past. I mean, they had a rum for a little while. It was labeled as a UFC rum.
It was a Blackbeard, right?
It was terrible. It was Blackbeard. So bad. Jeff the Animal and I did like a live tasting of it, and we wanted to like it so bad, but it was awful. And then, you know, they got Modelo and Bud Light. So, like, not the most sophisticated, not the most sophisticated alcohols sponsoring the UFC, but I guess, you know, they kind of represent the demographic.
Yeah. You a fan of Modelo?
I like a Modelo now and then. It wouldn't be like my first choice. But if I was like out at a Mexican restaurant and they were like, oh, we have, you know, Modelo Negro on draft, I might go opt for that.
Bud Light's my go-to cheap beer.
Mine was always Miller High Life.
I stuck with them through the storm too, Bill.
Did you?
Yeah, I didn't care. I was actually hoping somebody'd say something to me so I could make them feel ridiculous.
Yeah, well, if you like it, you like it. It doesn't matter whose face is on the can or whose can is on your face.
Yeah.
All right, should we do picks first? Because I want to put off this potential howler head shot.
Yeah, let's go through this picks. Let's start at the bottom of the...
Okay, so is that Billy Q?
No, it's the one before him.
Okay, so Fernando Padilla and Luis Payuelo. Close enough?
Close enough. All right. Better than I did.
Fernando and Luis. All right, what are the odds?
Fernando's minus 170. The guy you nailed his name is plus 135. I'm going to call him Lewis.
Okay. So, Lewis, I would say Pajuelo. So, Fernando is coming off a unanimous decision loss to Kyle Nelson. And before that, he had some impressive wins. He has a TKO win over Julian Arosa, who's also on this card, actually. That's an pretty impressive win if he could TKO Julian Arosa. So I imagine that's where the number's coming from. So who do you got?
So the theme of this card is I don't know who the hell half these people are, but Padilla's has two UFC fights. Luis is coming off a contender series, and he's also on a 5-fight finish streak. He had his only loss, and then he's been on a tear. So I'm just gonna take him for that. To hell. I don't think it's like a big UFC, you know, he's not going to have a big, I can't say he's not going to be nervous, but he's fought in the Apex before in his contender series fight. So it's, you know, he's been there, done that. He doesn't have to deal with the lights and all that shit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we need to update last week. I don't know my total, but just take $6 from where I was started last week. And that's where we're at because I didn't get a single one, which is terrible.
You had a clean sweep, the reverse parlay.
Reverse parlay. Oh,
so, terrible. Just for anyone who's for anyone who's thinking about taking betting advice from Matt the Mechanic, you may just want to pick opposite of him. Because if you did it last week, you would have made some big bucks. If you took a straight parlay on all six of those fights,
you'd made it quicker,
that would have made a lot of money.
A ton. But I'm still up for the year, so... Hey, chill out. We should be right around like $8.
All right. I'll take it. All right. So we're going with Luis Pajuelo.
Yep.
All right. Put it in the books. The next one, it's going to be really hard to predict who you're picking here. Billy Quarantillo, buddy of ours, friend of the show. Been on here many times. Of course, we're big supporters of his every time he gets in the octagon. And also just one of the most exciting guys on the roster. Billy Q's never had a boring fight. He's getting in there with Yusef Zalal on short notice. So Zalal took this fight on, I think, 2 weeks' notice. Zalal had a run in the UFC. He didn't have a lot of success, but his losses have aged well. If you go back and look, early in his UFC career, back in 2020, he fought the champ Ilia Topuria and went the distance with him, lost the unanimous decision. So that loss has aged very well. Then he lost to Sungwoo Choi and Sean Woodson, also very solid contenders. Then after a majority draw with Damon Blackshear, he got sent away, and went on a 3-fight winning streak, and now he's taking a short notice fight with Billy Quarantillo to punch his ticket back into the UFC. So do I even have to ask who you're picking on this one?
No. Although it does make me a bit nervous when a guy's fought his way back to the UFC still young. You know, and then when Billy announced the fight, he posted just a picture up. It didn't have the name, and I didn't recognize him. So I messaged you, and you sent me the name. And that's exactly what I saw. I was, holy shit, this guy, you know, went to a decision with Taboria. That's not good.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Here, maybe I can put your conscience at ease a little bit. Billy Quarantillo is a cardio machine. He puts a pace on guys that just breaks them. We saw it in the Damon Jackson fight. We've seen it time after time in his fights where he puts a pressure that's hard to explain. And it just wears guys out. You can see them break. And Zalal, I'm sure he's in great shape. He's probably one of these guys who stays ready in case he gets a call like this. But was he in a fight camp preparing for the kind of cardio that Billy Q is going to bring to the table? I don't think so. I don't think that's even possible. I think you need an extra long training camp, and you better grow a third lung if you want to prepare for a Billy Q fight. So
the odds, Billy's a minus 130 favorite. And okay. Zalal's plus 100.
Okay. So you're taking the favorite here.
Yep.
So you got an underdog and a favorite so far.
Yeah. I think I would take Billy if he was fighting Rampage Jackson, but
these days I would too. Rampage looking a little slow.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'd be able to catch Billy in there. Billy might be able to stick and move just enough to stay away from the clutches of Rampage. But yeah, same. So if you guys want an unbiased pick, don't listen to this show. But I think I made a good enough case for our boy Billy Q. You know, he bounced back from the loss against Barbosa. And he looked great in his last fight because he did to his opponent what his opponent is known for as well. Damon Jackson is another dog, and Damon Jackson's career took a bad turn after the Billy Q fight because he left the UFC and then went to the PFL, and I think he got badly knocked out in his last fight. But in any case, cheers to Billy Q. Billy Q fight week.
Cheers. Oh, I'll do it with Once Upon a Coconut.
Oh, there you go. So, of course, one of Billy's main sponsors, Once Upon a Coconut. So, if you want...
That stuff's great. I hate... I had coconut water before. It tastes like... it always had a hint of foot.
Yeah.
But this doesn't have that. And this is like the coconut mango. It's pretty cheap.
Once Upon a Coconut, feet-free coconut water.
Yeah, I don't know, but I know you know what I mean. It's just something there, you're like, ooh, I don't like this.
Yeah, some of the coconut waters do tend to have a little funky taste to them, but not that Once Upon a Coconut. I haven't had it myself, but...
I'll save one for you, and if there is a contest running, if you use Billy QMA on the website, you can enter it to win $1,000 on Fight Night, I think.
Oh, hell yeah. So,
and his gloves from the fight, which is kind of weird. But
you use that as a promo code?
Yeah, it's 20% off.
Yeah, I don't know what I would.
I mean, I think they're in Orlando, and I bought it yesterday, and it was here today.
I don't know what I would want to do with his gloves, sweaty gloves.
Yeah, just say keep it, put it on the wall, your new gym. And
yeah, auction them off for charity. Yeah. Yeah, auction it off and send the money to starving kids or something. All right, so we got the undefeated Peyton Talbot, who has been on a tear lately against Cameron Simon. Simon? Is that your dog, or is that somebody firing a weapon?
As they would say on National Lampoon, he's choking on a bone.
Oh, he got it up. All right, so Peyton Talbot... ran into a little bit of trouble in his last fight with Nick Aguirre, but wound up getting the rear naked choke win early in the third round. This kid's had a lot of hype He's fought on Uriah Faber's A1 combat for many of his fights. He's basically finished all but one of his seven wins. So he's been definitely impressive at 135 pounds. Cameron, I want to say Seaman.
Close enough.
This is another South African fighter. Young kid, 23 years old. Coming off a loss to Christian Rodriguez, who is top of mind. Just fought this past weekend. And that's his only loss. It was a unanimous decision loss back in October. So this is an interesting one because two young contenders that are on the rise, usually you don't see the UFC pair guys off in this way, but here we are. So what are the odds and who do you got?
Talbot's a -155 and Simon is a +120. I think okay. This fight is Billy's contention for fight of the night. If he wants that $50,000, this is the one he's, you know, working at. Simon fought four times last year. It's technically three because one was like late December. He's coming off his first loss. Both these guys are really talented. Simon kind of seems like he's more the technical guy, where Peyton kind of, you know, is a little more
flashy.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take Simon +120.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the undefeated record doesn't mean much when you only got one fight in the UFC, right? Because unless you go back and do a deep dive on his career and see the level of competition he was fighting, you know, I would put them kind of at the same level, since Simon's one loss is against an established UFC fighter. You know, it's tough to say how well either of these guys are really going to do. So I'm not mad at the underdog pick here. All right. So another young fighter, or used to be a young fighter, was a young up and comer, much like Talbot and Simon. Edmund Shahbazyan had a little bit of humbling on his UFC journey, getting in there with AJ Dobson. So Shahbazyan, you know, he hit a bump in the road with Derek Brunson when Derek Brunson just manhandled him. He was just a young kid at that time, possibly even still a teenager. You know, he was looking to break John Jones's record for the youngest UFC champion. There was a lot of hype behind him. He was looking great. You know, he had a bunch of finishes against some tough guys coming into the UFC as such a young kid, finished Jack Marshman, finished Brad Tavares. And then after he ran into Derek Brunson, suffered losses to Jack Hermanson, Nassourdine Imamov, got a nice TKO win against Dalja Lugiambula, and then lost his last fight against Anthony Hernandez. But now he's taken almost a year off to recover from that. So hopefully he's been working hard in the gym to kind of bounce back from that. And he's getting in there with AJ Dobson, who has three fights in the UFC, four if you count his contender series fight, and he's got a 50% win record. So all that considered, what are the odds and who do you like here?
Shahbazyan's -210, Dobson's +250. I just have a feeling that UFC is still behind Shahbazyan. I'm taking Shahbazyan.
I think that's kind of a safe pick. You know, Dobson is coming off of an impressive win against Tafan and Chukwi in his last fight, and that was in August, and he's definitely been a bit more active than Shahbazyan.
I was trying to look this fight up a little bit, and I couldn't find anything on Dobson on YouTube. And I'm too lazy to log into Fight Pass, so I just don't. If the UFC had some, were excited about this guy, you'd see some. They'd put something out. And
yeah, I wish there was something like, because I got rid of Fight Pass when they went over to ESPN, thinking like they would have the fight library there, but it's very difficult to navigate the ESPN Plus. Like sometimes you can find fights you're looking for, and sometimes It's like, did this guy ever even fight in the UFC? It's like impossible to find any of his fights.
Yeah, it's tricky because if it was before ESPN, it's on the Fight Pass. And if it was on ESPN and not a pay-per-view, then it's on the app. It's confusing.
Yeah, there's like a whole formula. You got to know quantum physics and calculus. I get
the pay-per-view. If it's the main card, you want to keep that. But if you got guys fighting their first fight in the UFC on the prelims, let us watch that fight. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, especially for trying to do research to make the people some money here.
Yeah, Dana, send me link. I need a link.
Send me location. All right, co-main event. Carl Williams, super athletic heavyweight here, getting in there with Justin Taffa. He was supposed to get in there with Junior Taffa, his brother, but Junior took Justin's place a week or two ago, and now Justin, or 3 weeks ago, you said?
I think.
Now Justin's taking Junior. It's so confusing, but this is the fight we have. Carl Williams against Justin Taffa. So, similar fight experience. Carl Williams 9-1, Justin Taffa 7-3. We know Justin Taffa has that one punch KO power. Carl Williams is just super athletic. He's on a hell of a winning streak too. Hasn't lost a fight since 2021, and that was by submission. I don't think there's any danger of submission against Justin Taffa. So. And he's coming off of a win against Chase Sherman in May last year. Retired Chase Sherman from the UFC for the third or fourth time. But Justin Badman Taffa is coming off a knockout win in September over Austin Lane. And that was the redemption for the first time they fought when there was the eye poke that ended the fight. He's also got KO wins over Parker Porker. That was a Freudian slip right there. I apologize, Parker. Parker Porter and Harry Hunsucker. Losses against, you know, guys who can grind out, such as Jared Vandera and Carlos Felipe. Also a knockout loss against Jorgen De Castro. So I think... Well, I'm not going to tell you what I think. I want you to tell me the odds and who you're picking, and then I'll tell you what I think.
The odds are Carl Williams minus 190, Justin Taffa plus 150. I like when I saw Justin at plus 150. I'm like, oh, we can get a knockout here, but I don't like the whole switcheroo that happened. That's not good. I just got a bad feeling. I'm going to take Carl Williams here.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not mad at that. I think Carl Williams is explosive. I think as long as his gas tank holds up, he should be able to get the job done, because once he starts getting winded, Taffa's going to be in his face throwing bombs. So that's where it's going to get interesting. If you're going to bet on Williams, I would hedge the bet with a late knockout from Justin Taffa, because that's where I see it happening. Late second round, or maybe like mid third round. So if you're into hedging bets, that would be my advice. I would take Carl Williams on a straight bet and Justin Taffa for a late knockout. That's kind of what I'm thinking. You know, we said when we started these picks and pours that I wouldn't be making picks, but I think I've made at least one pick every week. I just get like, once we get into it, I can't help myself. I don't think I've gotten one pick right, so don't bet your nest egg on anything I say. All right.
So the main event.
Yeah. Let's do it. Amanda Ribas against Rose Namajunas. So Rose taking a stab at flyweight after having been the two-time strawweight champion. Hasn't looked great in her last two fights. You know, we haven't seen the Thug Rose that made Daniel Cormier jump out of his chair screaming Thug Rose in quite a while. And Amanda Ribas, very hot and cold, especially in her last four or five fights. I think if we see the Thug Rose of old, she trucks Amanda Ribas. There's going to be no issue for her here. However, if we see the Rose Namajunas that's got 1 foot in and 1 foot out that we've seen in her last couple fights, it's a coin toss to me. It could, like, she might squeak out a win against Ribas, you know, because Ribas doesn't always show up.
Why did Rose leave Whitman?
I have no idea. If anyone knows.
I was trying to look it up. I found that she said that after the last fight, which is the first one he was gone, that it was just because it was in France and he was getting ready for, Gaethje Poirier?
Yeah.
But then on some video I saw this week, she's not training there, so that's not good.
Yeah, I mean, when you have other top contenders and you have someone who has 1 foot out the door and has, you know, mentioned the word retirement in interviews, it's hard as a coach. You know, you have to kind of give attention to the people that are all in, you know? And I'm not saying she hasn't been all in, you know, maybe she was in the gym all the time and just wasn't getting the attention she was looking for. But we know Gaethje's always in the gym, right? I mean, the guy damn near lives in the gym. This is all he lives to do.
I could be totally wrong, and Whitman could be there Saturday night. I guess we'll see. Yeah.
If anybody watching knows or can look it up, please share some insight in the comments so we can continue this conversation and I can avoid this potential howler head shot that's lurking over my shoulder here. So
odds, what's the
odds? Odds and pick.
Odds are +175 Amanda Ribas versus -225 for Thug Rose. And this hurts my feelings because some of my most fond moments in UFC were after Thug Rose wins. She has some awesome clips, you know, in all these days and talk about women's empowerment. I think you can go look to her and see some pretty good examples of, you know, rising from above, but
Mr. Jackpots.
Bill, do you think Amanda Ribas can stop this fight?
Can she? Yeah. Yes. Do I think she will? No. It'll be tough. I mean, Amanda Ribas finished her last fight with that spinning wheel kick against Luana Pinheiro. Other than that,
so what we're looking at is +450 for Amanda Ribas by decision, +600 by submission, and +900 by TKO. Yeah, I like this bet.
I mean, Thug Rose has only been submitted once, and it was in 2014. Against Carla Esparza. So that was 10 years ago, the last time she's been submitted. And Amanda Ribas is good on the ground. Like, she's solid. But I would say Thug Rose's jiu-jitsu is better.
That's the way I kind of had it. Like, Thug Rose clearly has the example or the advantage of on the feet. Ribas' wrestling is pretty nice. But then I think once she gets to the ground, yeah, Rose has probably got the edge there. But I'm thinking decision. That's what can take me from +175 to +450. I think if she wins, it's probably a decision.
I think the best bet for Ribas winning is a TKO. I think that's her best chance. She's got a little pop in her strikes. She mixes it up well. I don't know. She's never gone five rounds before. Rose has. So, you know, Rose would have the advantage there.
We can like round two and three or plus 35 and 4,500.
I guess if we see like the lethargic Rose Namajunas that we've seen in the last couple fights, then she could get pressured into, you know, a decision loss. I don't know, man. It's your pick.
I think I'm going to be a wimp and just take her. Just a straight bet, plus 175.
Watch her tap her in the first round.
Bitch. Well, you said it, so it's not going to happen. So we're good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely don't bet Amanda Ribas by submission in the first. I hope this clip doesn't come back to haunt me. You know, kind of a weird dream for me is to end up on one of these like spoof things, like people that watch podcasts to clip it and embarrass people. Like, I kind of like want to say something like that, that somebody else clips it. Like me saying like, oh, don't bet on Amanda Ribas by submission. And then it happens and somebody comes and takes that clip and then that goes viral. And that's my 15 minutes of fame.
Well, Want to make a try?
I'm genuinely concerned right now.
On both sides of the liquor and the topic.
Let me break out the old howler head, guys. I really don't want to take a shot of this. So whatever he's gonna throw at me, I'm going to use every debate skill I've acquired in my life, even if I agree with him 99%. But I'm prepared to take the consequences if need be.
All right. So Sean Strickland's going to make a couple appearances on this episode. But the first thing for the shots, he's been getting into it with Ian Garry. And he's been taking a lot of crap because he talks about Ian Garry's wife. And my hot take is that Ian Garry's wife is fair game. Now, I don't like people messing with people's wives unless they start sticking their nose in it, which she has done. I brought a clip here. This is her this week talking about Sean Strickland.
Okay.
This tsunami of aggression towards the undefeated welterweight all exploded when former middleweight title holder and current multiple world bullshit title holder Sean Strickland read a clickbait headline but didn't bother to fact check or read the whole article. Unsurprising, gullible behavior.
She goes on and on for 5 minutes about how Ian's the victim and all this, basically making Ian's argument for him. And then gets offended when Sean says things like this.
Well, how can I get the attention that I want? How can I get what I want? You talk about me. You bring my fucking name up. You've never done anything. You've never accomplished anything. The only thing you've ever done is seduce famous men. And let me tell you why you're such a despicable person. Everybody has gone and went and forgot about this. We've accepted Ian. We've accepted you. Disgusting it may seem. And you bring this back up and tarnish your husband's name just because that little insecure succubus demon inside you wants attention.
He's harsh, but he's not wrong. I mean, if they don't want the attention, then they shouldn't be making videos on the internet. You know, his wife should not be making his arguments for him.
Okay. I'm going to do my best here because you're not wrong. However, I will say, instead of retaliating against her, Sean Strickland could call out Ian Garry because they're both professional fighters. They're both close in weight and say like, hey man, I got a problem with the shit your wife is saying about me. Let's settle it in the cage. You and I.
I think he's done that mullet more than a couple times.
And the no fight agreement has come out of it.
Well, no, because, you know, Ian's also got another beef with another fighter that his wife references in that video, Colby Covington. And I think that's a much more likely fight for him.
Okay, here's the thing. I don't agree with her doing this. She shouldn't be fighting his battles for him. If he's getting into it with other professional fighters, that should be on him, and she should stay out of it, quite frankly. But I think Strickland's response should be, look, I would be happy to settle this with your husband in the cage, but he doesn't want it. I've offered to fight him many times, and he seems to be scared of me. So I think that's the way to take the high road. I still don't, yeah, she shouldn't be opening her mouth and talking about, you know, fighters who can't do anything really to retaliate. But I think there still is a way to take the high road here. You still, you know, address the man like, hey, man, keep your fling on a string and let's get in the cage and settle this thing. I didn't mean for that to rhyme three times, but.
Yeah, it still doesn't count. Bottoms up.
Ah, fuck. Why do you have to do this to me?
Oh, what did I drink last week? Wasn't that bad last week? Oh, no, it was proper 12 apple. Pretty good.
Yeah, see? That was nice. I always get the shit end of this deal. Was this segment my idea?
Yeah, and if it's so bad, then why is there so much missing out of that bottle?
Oh, because anybody who comes over, I offer them to try it.
I think I might have taken a drink out of that.
Yeah, you've taken a shot or two out of this. I did the one sample where I made the video, and then I haven't touched it since. I'm already getting that melted banana Laffy Taffy. Oh, I don't want to do this.
Is it strong enough that you could, like, cut it up, like put it on fire so it's like a toasted banana? It's probably not even strong enough liquor-wise.
It's 40%. I mean, it'll catch fire.
Yeah, maybe try that next time.
And I could probably make a cocktail out of it, like an Elvis.
I bet you could make. That's a good challenge. I challenge for you, Bill. Make a decent cocktail out of that.
I'll make an Elvis Presley cocktail, like a fried peanut butter and banana sandwich cocktail.
How do you fry peanut butter?
Well, the shot wouldn't be fried. It would just taste like a fried peanut butter and banana sandwich.
Oh. Oh, okay.
In any case, enough stalling. Down the hatch. Now I really dislike Ian Garry's wife. I didn't have a problem with her before, but now I got to drink this nasty
last straw.
Howler head. Thanks a lot, whatever your name is. Oh, it's worse than I remember. Damn it, Dana White. Why do you have to bring this into our lives?
You know he doesn't drink that shit.
Guys, I think he does because he's admitted, you know, he says he just likes it and he knows he doesn't have a refined whiskey palate. This guy is he's playing $100,000 games of craps or whatever the fuck. He could be getting top shelf scotch delivered to him for free, you know, like really expensive bottles, and he chooses to drink this like $18 banana swill. Oh, that really grinds my gears. I'm gonna be tasting banana for the rest of the week.
So let's finish up the Sean Strickland talk. There's a clip that you wanted me to get, and I'll play that.
Let's do it.
I think that, you know, I have everything. I'm rich, I'm famous, like I have everything I've ever fucking wanted. And I still am mentally unwell. And I get in these like mindsets to where like I want to burn everything down the world. Like I want to have nothing so I can just fucking lose it and just take out everything on people, you know? And I think that like you guys, in a weird way, are like my family. Like I've shared some shit with you guys and you guys have shared some shit with me that like I feel more connected with my fans than I think most people feel just because we've gone through a lot together. And man, you know, I have everything I want, dude, and I still struggle with mental health, you know. And my memory is so short that, like, when I've gone through this week, I think to myself,
like once I get past it, I think to myself, oh man, like that was a really rough time in my life. But then when I really think about it, this happens multiple times a month, every month, you know? And again, I don't even know why I'm telling you guys this. I've just been kind of going through some shit. I'm fine. I'll be fine. I'm going to go train right now and try to hurt all my friends and all the demons will go away.
Okay. So there's a lot going on there. But the basic message is, I think, that he's telling people, even if you achieve fame and wealth and success, it doesn't mean that you'll be able to beat your demons. They're still going to be there, which I like that message. I don't necessarily agree with everything Sean Strickland puts out there, but I kind of like that he's saying these things. Now, I want to touch on a couple of things. He says, I have everything I've ever wanted. You know, I'm rich and famous and successful. However, he's also said in the past that those aren't things that he wants. He said he doesn't even care about the UFC title. You know, he just cares about competing and stuff. So is being rich and famous something that he's always wanted? Because he said, I have everything I've always wanted. But he doesn't. Because what he really wants, I think, and I'm going to get a little psychoanalytical here, what he wants is to feel like he deserves those things. And he doesn't feel that way. He feels like he has all these great things. He's got money. He's got a girlfriend. He's been a UFC champion. He's been to the top of his craft. But he doesn't feel like he deserves all that success, in my opinion. And that bothers him. He wants to feel like he deserves it. And he doesn't feel that. And that's a problem that none of us will probably ever be able to relate to. He's part of a very elite group of people that has worn that UFC title around his waist. And, you know, almost none of us are ever going to realize that. So it's hard for us to put ourselves in his shoes, but he tries to be relatable in the way that by saying like having fame and success and money doesn't make your problems go away. It doesn't make your demons go away. So whatever you're struggling with, you have to find another way to deal with it besides seeking, you know, the lifestyle of the rich and famous. And that's just my my bachelor's degree in psychology, two cents there.
I'm glad you had that opinion, because when I watched this and I saw all the reaction, it was like, oh, he needs help and that. And I didn't see it that way at all. I felt like it was just a PSA to people that, you know, don't think that reaching the end of your goal is what is going to make everything happy. Mm-hmm. It's to find an outlet, a group, a tribe to keep you stable, regardless of how much money or anything you have. People call Sean dumb. I don't think he's dumb. I think he's just honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cop-out to call him dumb, because he doesn't have a filter. He wears his thoughts on his sleeve. He wears his heart on his sleeve, and he says what he thinks, and he happens to have a large audience. And I think a lot of people gravitate to that kind of honesty, right? Because I think it's trendy to make it seem like your life is perfect, especially when you reach a certain level of success. There's this expectation that you have to carry yourself in a certain way, that everything is going well because you've reached this level. And I think the reality is a lot of people who reach that are fucking miserable. And he's telling the truth about that. And it's probably going to cost him, you know, some sponsors, but I think he's going to reach more people on an emotional level by having this kind of honesty with his fans, with his audience, whatever you want to call it. Because a lot of people who reach his level of fame and success are full of shit. You know, if you look at their social media, they're not talking about things like this. They're not talking about mental health. they're just making it seem like, oh, flew on a private jet today, and oh, here's me on a beach, and here's me doing a photo shoot, and here's me meeting, you know, the prime minister of France or whatever the fuck. And nobody talks about like, hey, I have all this money and I've done all these amazing things, but like, I still feel kind of sad sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what people want to hear, because people, like everybody who has at least something going for them, you know, steady job, you know, solid family life, everybody at some point in the day or at some point in the week, it's just like, fuck, man, why does all this happen to me? What's going on here? What, like, everybody kind of internalizes their struggle and thinks it's only them dealing with it. And here Sean Strickland is like, look, guys, I'm rich, I'm famous, I've been a UFC champion, and I still struggle with shit. So don't feel bad if you feel like you're struggling, even if you have a lot going for you. And I think that that's a very positive message.
Yep. Great breakdown, and cheers to Sean Strickland on that one.
Yeah, cheers, Sean.
So I got a couple rapid-fire news stories. Walt Harris, cheater, 4-year suspension.
Ooh.
And he's 40, so he's done.
Yeah, it's, there's no comment. I mean, yes. Unless he goes to Bellator, 44 in Bellator. Oh, but he won't. He'll still be under contract.
Yeah, he's done.
Never mind.
Five fighters cut from the roster this week. Brian Barberena, Carlos Candelo, Felipe Lenz, Josh Parisian, and Joanne Wood, which Joanne Wood we knew.
Wait, Felipe Lenz was cut?
Yep.
He just won his fight.
His cut.
Wow, we need to look into this. He just won against Ion Cutelaba like 2 weeks ago. All right, the one name that resonated with me and the one that I knew about was Brian Barberena. So Brian Barberena got submitted by Gerald Mershart this past weekend, which I think is kind of unfair to cut him because he moves up to middleweight and gets finished by a guy who just tied Anderson Silva's record for most finishes in the middleweight division. So, like, give him a little slack. All that being said, I think Brian Barberena is tailor-made for bare-knuckle boxing. And he's got a good name behind him. I say bring him over to BKFC, put him right into a title fight at 175 pounds against the redneck Dave Mundell. And that fight would be guaranteed fireworks. Brian Barberena, Dave Redneck Mundell, that fight excites me more than the bullshit fight that was announced to headline Knucklemania between Mike Perry and Thiago Alves. I guarantee you, Dave Mundell and Brian Barberena would be a better bare knuckle fight than Mike Perry and Thiago Alves.
I like that. That is, yeah. Felipe Lenz, I don't know. I looked at his social media real quick. He's talking about going into the fire or something. Somebody screwed up somewhere.
So what was the source of Felipe Lenz getting cut?
Oh, that UFC Roster Watch Twitter account. That's pretty.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. They are pretty accurate. That's where I saw the Brian Barberena thing too. All right. Shout out to UFC Roster Watch on X. But that one doesn't make, that's the only one that doesn't make sense to me. The other ones, whatever. I know Brian Barberena has lost a few in a row, but I would have thought they would keep him because he's exciting, right? Put him in there against a striker at middleweight. You'll get at least a couple fun fights out of him. But now that he is cut, allegedly, BKFC, Dave Feldman, get on the phone, sign Brian Barberena before he gets lost in, like, he won't have much of a career in PFL, Bellator, whatever that is now. He might do okay, he could be a star in Bare Knuckle after he gets beat by Dave Mundell.
Yeah. Speaking of Bellator, there is a fight, an event tomorrow in Ireland.
All right.
It's Corey Anderson versus Carl Moore for the whatever belt they're in.
What?
There's another one more news story we haven't talked about that I don't know if we want to talk about. There's a big lawsuit that...
Fuck it. Let's talk about it.
All right. So in 2014, there's a case brought against the UFC by 1,200 fighters. They're suing for $1.6 billion, saying that I forget. I don't know much about law. It's an antitrust lawsuit. So I guess from what I can find out, it seems like the fighters are... feel like they're not equally compensated compared to other, you know, other athletic divisions or
sure.
organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they settled that $1.6 billion lawsuit for $335 million this week.
Right. Now, is there any, because I haven't seen this and granted, I haven't looked too far into it. Is there any information as to how that money will be dispersed?
What I saw is each fighter that's part of the lawsuit, when it breaks down, will get around $160,000.
Okay, so, and I assume that most or all of the fighters involved in that lawsuit are no longer with the UFC?
I would imagine. But from what I understand, the bigger part of this settlement is that the UFC does not have to restructure any contracts moving forward. If they can continue to, I mean, if the graphics I'm reading are correct, they pay like 17% of the revenue to the fighters, where the NFL is almost like 40, 45%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the NFL is making a lot more money.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. So I was like, well, and they're independent athletes. So I went and looked at tennis. And tennis, even it's not that much money, but tennis still is about the same, 40%.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Not smart enough to really have an opinion on this. But
yeah.
I think the only opinion I can share is Brendan Schaub's opinion, is that the fighter pay problem's never going to be solved until the fighters at the top of the food chain take a stance toward, you know.
Right. But why would they?
Right.
Because
this lawsuit, which has been going on for 10 years, is over. So
mm-hmm.
I guess, yay, UFC.
Yeah. Let's think
go Netflix.
I think that if a fighter is considering, if they're at the level where they're getting into the UFC, you have to invest in a good lawyer to review your contract and to help you with the negotiation process. Because once you sign a contract, you're agreeing to fight for a certain amount of money. You know, now whether that amount of money is worth putting your body and the health of your brain on the line is a decision that you have to make, but you should probably have some people who know how to read those kind of contracts helping you. And I feel like it's something that not a lot of guys are doing, if any, because I've been around a lot of gyms. I've seen how the sausage is made, so to speak. And a lot of it is coaches and managers bringing these fighters to the UFC and saying, I got you in the UFC, sign this piece of paper and you'll be good. And this fighter's like, oh, great.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. It's, and then when the legal questions comes up, it turns into a post on Facebook from a coach or something of, hey, does anybody have a way to get this or that done? Yeah. They don't have a person that really knows what's going on that can do these things for them.
And nor are they really thoroughly reading these contracts. It's like you're agreeing to fight for $12,000 and we have to offer you 3 fights a year. And it's up to you whether you accept them or not. So whether you're injured, you know, it's just like any other independent contractor. If you're hurt, you can't work, you can't get paid. And you're agreeing to this line of work. Now, it's tough because if you negotiate too hard, you're going to lose a huge opportunity. There's 40 other guys in your weight class waiting in line to sign that piece of paper blindly, which is why it's hard to fix this problem. Because they can keep putting these contracts in front of guys, and guys will keep signing them because they want to have that UFC photo shoot. They want to have that opportunity to showcase their skills. And
I mean, yeah, if you're a poor kid that's trying to, you know, take on the fight world, you don't give a shit what that contract says, as long as it says UFC at the top.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
and to a lot of them, 12 grand is a lot of money until you realize a third of it is going to your taxes. And then you got to pay your coaches a percentage, depending on if you're under contract with your coach or manager or whoever else put a piece of paper in front of you before you got to this point and says, I'm getting 20% of whatever you make from here on out. So it's a tough thing. You know, yeah.
And then you get that money and then your foot's broke and you got to wait 8 months before you can go to work again.
Mm-hmm. And then sometimes they'll still be on the line to pay a manager or something like that, depending on how the contract is set up with them. So it's an unfortunate thing. And, you know, there's not that I know of any lawyers doing pro bono work to help fighters, you know, read contracts and make sure they're set up with at least like health insurance and they're not going to be in debt to some, you know, con man manager. You know, a lot of the issues take place before they even sign that contract with the UFC. A lot of the problems take place in the gyms they're at and with the managers they're signing contracts with. And I feel like that's not talked about enough. Everybody's quick to say like, oh, UFC's the big bad monster. Are they though? They're giving it to you in black and white. This is what we're paying you to do this.
You know, maybe a solution would be like, I know in the NFL, to be a manager in the NFL, you have to be approved. So you can't be a shithead. Like, you know, maybe that's some legislation. I don't know if it's legislation, but something.
Show me the money.
Yeah.
Jerry Maguire reference? Anybody? I'm old.
Yeah.
All right. You got anything else?
There's nothing else.
It's a lie from
Connor's
Satan.
Not, the last thing is Connor's not fighting. He's promoting a movie. There's a whole lot of drama this week, but that's what it boils down to.
Well, he said he's fighting in June, though.
And then today Dana said, nah, he's promoting a movie.
Yeah. Let's talk about that real quick because Connor came out and he said, I'm fighting in June. I heard from my management. This was decided a few days ago, which is weird that him and Dana aren't having any direct contact. That's a little strange to me. Here's the issue. He's got 2 fights left on his contract, and this is usually the point where they're trying to re-sign people. But they've never had a situation like this in the history of the UFC because here's a guy who hasn't won a fight in 4 years, is coming off a broken leg, but he's the biggest star they have. So what do? They have all this, you know, lawsuit stuff that's going on. They didn't know how much they were going to have to pay out for that. Now they know. It's hard to put money in front of Connor that's enticing enough to make him want to extend his contract when you know he could go box Manny Pacquiao and make $30 million or whatever the case. But how can you, with good conscience, put that money towards a contract extension with this guy when he hasn't won a fight since 2019 or early 2020, and he's coming off getting his leg snapped in half and skirting around the USADA test to take steroids to recover from it? which I don't blame him for. If I broke my leg in half, I would take every drug on the planet to feel better. But this is a very unique situation, and this is what the real holdup is, in my opinion.
My hot take should be that I don't think I really give a shit about Connor anymore. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
I expect to, if we finally see him again, I don't expect it to be some spectacular display of martial arts in the cage. Here's an interesting, I just noticed on DraftKings Saturday, June 29th, there is an open line on Connor versus Michael Chandler now. That was not there 6 hours ago.
And what are the odds?
What do you think the odds are?
I would think it's pick 'em.
Nope. Michael Chandler is a +100. Connor's -120.
All right, so that's pretty close to a pick 'em.
No, pick 'em is when they'll both be -110. Or minus 120.
Yeah, that's a pretty close line.
No, he's 2-1 favorite.
Is that 2-1?
Yeah, that's 2-1.
Oh. All right.
I like that. I'd like to put some money on Chandler right now.
Do you get that money back if the fight doesn't happen?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, then go ahead. All right. Well, if you want to put money on something else, you can put it towards MMA on the Rocks merchandise. Reaper1.co is the website. You can use the promo code MMARocks10. You can get one of these nice over-the-top, under-the-influence shirts that I happen to be wearing right now. You can also get this in a tank top or a hoodie. Hoodie sales are going to plummet, I'm assuming, since it's been pretty darn hot in this part of the country, and it's starting to warm up everywhere else. It's springtime. So grab yourself a tank top. Start lifting some weights so you look good in it by summertime, and post some pictures on social media. Make sure you tag me at MMA on the Rocks. Make sure you guys are subscribed with notifications on all your favorite platforms, whether it's YouTube or Facebook, Twitter, to join the show live, and then also every podcast platform that's out there. I think I'm still on all of them. I don't know what they all are anymore, but I'm told I'm on them all. So if I'm not on your favorite podcast platform, let me know. And that's all we got for this week. I'm still tasting this nasty howler head. So until next time, cheers, everybody. Goodbye.